at Stakes of Listeria, food born in the NRA, NSA, USA, home of Uncle Salmonella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts. The Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And, of course, we too are saddened by the passing of Nelson Mandela. The great heroes of the world are the ones who break down those walls, those walls of prejudice and oppression. Breaking down the walls of racism and sexism. And yeah, so quite a man. Right? And apartheid, bringing that down, the separation that makes the us and the them. We are separate from each other, so, you know, we can start using language, you know, oh, they're only the others, them, right? They're only black, they're only Jews, they're only Muslims, they're only Iraqis, they're only Afghanis. Right? They're only animals. Man, animals come with the ready-made label of prejudice, right? I mean, if we want to denigrate other humans, certainly, you know, name the species, and that works in our speciesist language, right? Well, they're only animals, rats, pigs, cows, snakes, doesn't matter, right? You know, for a while there, I was forgiving of Mike Malloy. Oh, I used to like to listen to Mike Malloy. I was forgiving of his speciesist language, but recently I heard that his hobby is taking his firearm and going to the city dump there in Atlanta and doing what he calls plinking. Plinking. He shoots defenseless, harmless, innocent rats for his hobby. Bastion of progressive radio, so I guess I can't listen to him anymore. It's a plink. That's the sound of the radio going off because, yeah, I mean, the speciesist language was enough, you know, but, I mean, here's somebody, that's how we think of animals, right? They're, you know, for recreation. Let's just go plink. So, you know, our language reflects that. They're just animals, and, you know, we're so violent against animals. Oh, you know, that I can kill two birds with one stone, right? Why do you want to kill birds? Why do you want to kill any birds, right? Oh, there's more than one way to skin a cat. I don't want to know about it, really. I didn't want to know the one way. Why would anybody want to skin a cat? Oh, well, I guess in China, cats are skinned and dogs are skinned and exported for leather. You know, leather is an equal opportunity abuser for so many species, including cats and dogs. Also cows and pigs and sheep and goats and horses and deer. You know, turning animals into clothing and accessories, skins of alligators, snakes, kangaroos, ostriches, even elephants. I've, you know, just always hated that expression. There's always more than one way to skin a cat. Ridiculous, huh? And everyone's getting skinned for leather, you know? I mean, more and more leather is coming from China, and holy cow, leather is coming from India, too. Perhaps you've seen the videos of how cows are forced to walk to slaughterhouses in India by cracking their tails and rubbing hot peppers in their eyes. Holy cow. And you know, that's the good stuff that happens to them. You know, that the other stuff you don't get to see. And as far as leather production goes in the U.S., well, cows killed for flesh eating are made much more profitable by the sale of their skin for leather, which accounts for about 10% of their market monetary worth as we make products out of beings. So, of course, you can't be a meat-eating environmentalist in that animal agriculture produces at least 51% of all human-caused greenhouse gas emissions, even though I listen to the radio, progressive radio, and they're saying, oh, what can we do for climate change? Well, you can, just listening this morning to the station I love so much in the Bay Area, KPFA, I do a commentary every Wednesday morning in the 8 o'clock hour, and the question was, oh, what can we do about climate change? And the advice was, join a campaign to prevent future railroad trains from transporting coal into your community. When animal agriculture accounts for at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions caused by humans, we're not saying go vegan. We're saying campaign against future railroads. Anyway, so that's pretty crazy in itself. But, a leather-wearing environmentalist also is really kind of an oxymoron because in addition to being responsible for meat industry environmental devastation, all the toxic chemicals used in the tanning process, as we discussed regarding fur on last week's show, where skins would naturally biodegrade, it takes a lot of toxicity to make them unnaturally last, forever. So, and this being the holiday shopping season, perhaps we can consider not wearing animals, not eating animals. For some strange reason, people have mistaken cows to be their mothers. As far as I can see that, they drink their milk as if they were their mothers, and I know it's pretty weird, right? But then, when the ones mistaken for their mothers can't produce milk anymore, well, it's okay to slash mother's throat then, and people then wear the skins of those whom they thought they were their mothers. And you have to admit, people are kind of strange and don't really know what to eat or what to wear. And if they're not wearing their mothers, well, they're wearing babies. And if the cow is your mother, and she must be, or else, you wouldn't be drinking her milk, right? Then the veal calf is your baby brother. And when you wear calf skin, well, aren't you making, quite the fashion statement about yourself? Look at me. I'm such a trend-setting, I'm such a trendsetter. Wearing baby. Isn't baby fashionable? Aren't I just so fashionable wearing murder victims just every time I wear leather, wool, silk, and fur? And please do check the December 1st archive at GoVeganRadio.com for a discussion of fur, why our protests need to go beyond just a fur-free Friday, but also, where's our leather-free Tuesday, plus the other 6 days, of course. Where are our wool-free Wednesdays? And the other 6 days, of course. Where are our silk-free Saturdays? Of course, plus the other 6 days. Sorry, it's hard for me to protest an atrocity and, say abstain from it just one day per week, and excuse participation in that atrocity the other 6 days, as in meat-free Mondays. That's what they seem to do to me, So it's like, hey, I'll go meat-free on Monday. Does that mean, oh, and by the way, does that mean dairy and egg-free too? And if not, what's the point anyway? So, I'll do meat-free Mondays, and that excuses me from subsidizing rape, imprisonment, mutilation, and murder of animals the other 6 days. Do you ever think that these are tortured murder victims on our plates, huh? I mean, animal cruelty is hiding everywhere, right? Especially in our refrigerators and in our clothes closet. I mean, do we ever think that there are tortured murder victims on our bodies, head to toe, fur hats, leather shoes, fur-trimmed leather coat, wool socks, wool suit, wool sweater, silk shirt, silk tie, silk sarong, silk pajamas, silk negligee. Don't worry, animals know it was their purpose to be beheaded to become a belt or a wallet or a pair of gloves. They know, right? They're only animals. They know that. Of course, their greatest aspiration is to be made into a to make it to designer labelhood. Wouldn't that be what the animals want, don't you think, right? So that you pay proper exorbitant prices. After all, the cost really is their lives. All the wool that you wear is from sheep who are all killed. Nobody gets out alive. That sweater was meant to be worn by the sheep, who knew just how much to grow to keep warm. And then along came, the human supremacists, the animal apartheid practitioners, the human supremacists who decide to genetically manipulate sheep so that they grow more wool than is natural for them, for greater profits, of course. And around 50% a merino wool in the global marketplace originates in Australia, where breeding practices have created sheep with wrinkled skin so that they can produce more wool. But that wrinkled skin leads to conditions of excessive moisture that allows flies to lay eggs in their skin. Then the eggs hatch into sheep-eating maggots. Wait, I wasn't calling anybody, that wasn't me using a derogatory term. This is fact. Although I'm sure that people would call other people that in order to go to war against them or do violence against them, right? So that also creates a very painful condition known as fly strike for the sheep. And so to prevent this from happening, standard practice in the wool industry is just to slice off a lot of the lamb skin around the hindquarters and, no reason to use any painkillers. I mean, they're only animals, right? I guess there's more than one way to skin a lamb. I think I'll pick up on this after the break. Coming up, Professor Gary Francione, animal rights commentary, and Mark Sutton, author of the first vegan pizza book, Heart Healthy Pizza, on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. Reminds me of the days when I used to play music on the radio like Santana and Europa. Where did I go wrong? Now it's the vegan radio talk show that I do every week, for the animals, And green light, time to go vegan. That is, and Greenlight Meals makes it easier than ever with great-tasting, nutritious meals delivered right to your door, wherever your door might be in the USA. Greenlight, time to go to the website, greenlightmeals.com. That's green, L-I-T-E, meals.com. You care about animals and the environment, and you want your family on the road to better health, go with Greenlight Meals. Check out the menu at greenlightmeals.com. Breakfast choices include tofu scramble, breakfast burritos, banana walnut pancakes, Cinnabon oatmeal, and a lot more. Entrees include chipotle falafel with sweet potato burrito, baked bean and veggie chili, tofu fritters with hot peppers relish, root vegetable soup, lentil soup, stuffed peppers, even vegan barbecue chicken, beefless stew, and buffalo cauliflower. And a lot more snacks from jerky to trail mix to peanut butter cups. And a lot more there, too, for the kids. How about chickpea tenders with dipping sauce or mac and trees? Greenlight Meals even delivers delicious smoothies like blueberry lemon zest or carrot cake or strawberry shortcake or PBJ. Or, just go to the website, check it out. Gift certificates are available. There's a meal plan that's right for you. And when you sign up for one, you'll accelerate your fitness and weight loss goals with consultation and workout plans from Melissa Bray, Greenlight Meals fitness and nutrition consultant and NCCPT certified personal trainer and nutritionist with a culinary arts degree from Johnson and Wales University. So now there's nothing to stop you from going vegan. You don't even have to go anywhere with delivery to your home or office. Just go to greenlightmeals.com. So that's it. You know, everybody talks to me about, okay, you've convinced me all the reasons to go vegan. Now, what do I eat? Well, there's one of your options right there. And someone who is very convincing, it's very important to him that you go vegan. It's Professor Gary Francione. He is the first academic to teach animal rights theory in an American law school, Rutgers University, and he has a new book, Eat Like You Care. His website is abolitionistapproach.com. You're an hour early this week, Professor Francione.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed, Bob. I am. And how are you?
Good, good, good. Glad to have you with us here. Oh, by the way, just, you know, a few weeks ago, I had Austin Aries, like the wrestler from TNT, Spike TV, actually. He's known in the wrestling world as the greatest man who ever lived. And he follows me on Twitter and he likes the show. And also, so I said, well, what does that make me then? So he said, the greatest broadcaster who ever lived. So I hate to interrupt people when they're saying things like that. So I let him go on and on. And then last week, right at the end of the show, it appeared that there was a spark of brilliance from me. And I, you know, don't want to just let that go by, because I don't even know what it was, but there was something that I don't know if you even remember. Do you?
Are you asking me or your producer?
You.
Your engineer, rather.
You. You.
Oh, no, I don't. Bob, you say many things that you say. Marks of brilliance. I'm sorry, but I...
Oh, darn.
Pick one out.
It had something to do with theory, and right at the end, and you said, I was talking about how, for some reason, I didn't like the words humane or welfare or whatever.
Oh, yes, you said you didn't like the word humane,
and welfare, and welfare,
like
too,
I don't know. Welfare, because you thought these words had been appropriated, but I don't remember the comment you made. I remember you said something that I thought was very interesting, and actually what I will do is go back and listen to the archived show, and next week I will... return with your brilliant comment, and we can discuss it.
Okay, I just hate to let a compliment go by, you know what I mean? It's like they're so few and far between that I thought, well, let me seize upon the moment. But I knew you'd forget, and I forgot too, so...
I'm sorry?
Yeah, what are we doing tonight?
Well, I wanted to mention two things, two ideas. One was... You know, it's been an interesting week. Nelson Mandela died, and I, on my Facebook site, the Abolitionist Approach to Animal Rights Facebook site that I have, I posted something about Mandela being a great man, because I think he was a great man. I think he believed in nonviolence, and he stopped bloodshed in post-apartheid South Africa. And I posted this, and I started getting a lot of really nasty comments from people who said that he wasn't a vegan, and that's true, he wasn't a vegan. And I was thinking, you know, it's really sort of interesting. Let's imagine a thought. Let's do a thought experiment. Let's imagine that in his final years, Nelson Mandela became interested in animal ethics, and he decided that he needed to rethink the issue. So what he did was he got online, and he went to a few of the websites, and he went to HSUS, and he went to Humane Society International, and he went to non-vegan outreach, and he went to perhaps even PETA. And what he saw was things that encouraged him to engage in compassionate consumption. He saw that Humane Society International has its own Happy Meat label, Humane Choice. He saw that the Humane Society of the United States promotes farming and has all sorts of partnerships with farmers. He saw that PETA gave an award to Temple Grandin, a slaughterhouse designer. He saw that PETA gave an award to Whole Foods. And I was thinking, you know, how can anybody, I mean, this is the problem, isn't it, Bob? That when someone becomes interested in animal ethics, and they pick up Peter Singer and they read him talking about being a conscientious omnivore, and that this is a morally defensible position to eat animals that have been, to be conscientious about eating animals that have been humanely raised and killed and things like that. And so, when you've got the leaders, so-called leaders of the animal movement, making claims like this, and encouraging people to believe that there's such a thing as compassionate consumption, and that there's a moral way to do something which I maintain is inherently immoral, what conclusion might Nelson Mandela have come to? And the thing that people were really upset about was that there was some picture circulating around about him having killed an antelope or some other animal in a hunting situation. And I was thinking, again, if he went to these websites, what he would learn is that you shouldn't eat factory farmed animals. That in fact, just basically, just about any other animal is a much better moral choice, including animals that are basically 99% in factory farming. And just perhaps, you have crate-free pork or cage-free eggs or something. And could Nelson Mandela, if he looked at the modern animal movement, this is my question, if Nelson Mandela became interested in animal ethics and he consulted the modern animal movement, would he have even thought to go vegan? And the answer is no. And if he saw the V word, what he would see is veg, asterisk N. He'd see anything and everything but vegan. That was point number one. The second point.
Yeah.
It's your show. Go ahead, comment.
No. I mean, that's he'd be eating grass-fed beef.
Yes,
I'm sure.
Exactly.
What's called, grass-fed.
Exactly.
Beef.
But, exactly. Yeah, he'd be having freedom food imported from England because the RSPCA thinks that's just grand, and indeed they have a whole program and they make lots of money certifying things freedom food. The other
there's this web page, the HSUS Agriculture Council for Colorado.
Yes.
And they support one guy, Mike Calicrate, who his contribution to humane meat is going around with a mobile slaughterhouse, and I'm going to circulate the video of how humane that is. But what's amazing to me is another member of this partnership with HSUS in Colorado, Brad Buchanan. And he's where Wayne Pacelli led a tour, a grass-fed beef ranch tour. His wife is actually certified to provide bovine massage and acupressure. That's on the website. So we know now that once, this is right here. As long as the animals have massage and acupressure, it's humane. It's humane meat. It's right on the website. I'm not kidding, though. She's certified in bovine massage and acupressure to sell the public to eat murder victims. Sorry.
Yeah, whole thing, the entire animal movement right now in 2013 is in the United States, in much of Europe, certainly in Great Britain, is basically one big con job to sort of get people to think that there's a right way to do the wrong thing, and I think that's really unfortunate. The second thing I wanted to comment on is there were some lawsuits filed this week to writs of habeas corpus. A writ of habeas corpus is a writ which is, if somebody's in prison, for example, you bring a writ of habeas corpus where a judge calls on the captors, the people who have the prisoner, and asks them to justify their holding the prisoner. And some common law writs of habeas corpus were filed by something called the Non-Human Rights Project. And they brought these writs of habeas corpus in New York on behalf of some chimpanzees. And it's a common law writ. They used the common law writ, which was used in the 18th century when a slave named Somerset was brought to England. He escaped, and he was being held on a ship, as I recall, and a writ of habeas corpus was brought, and Lord Mansfield held that Somerset was not a thing, and he released him. And so I infer that what they're doing with the writs of habeas corpus is they want judges in New York State to say that chimpanzees aren't things, that they're persons, and then to release them to a sanctuary. Now, I have two comments. One is, and I think we really need to think about this, because what's happening is what we're doing is linking personhood and linking moral significance with human-like characteristics. So the idea is these animals are like us, so they count. And as much as I would like to see every chimpanzee out of captivity, wherever that poor animal is, the bottom line is that what we're doing is reinforcing...
Professor Francione, we have to pick up with that thought after the break. Stay with me. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We'll continue talking with Gary Francione. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, Twitter at goveganradio, Facebook. There are many Bob Linden pages and a Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden page. We're talking to Professor Gary Francione. And, isn't it great when a law professor talks legalese and we're talking about habeas corpus? And maybe you can pick up with the thought applied to chimpanzees. So,
yeah, the lawsuits are seeking to use the common law writ of habeas corpus, which is basically going to ask a judge to justify, to ask the people who have this these animals, these chimpanzees, to justify their captivity. Now, that's assuming the judge will do that and not throw the thing out because the judge says the writ of habeas corpus doesn't apply to non-human animals. But the bottom line is like, what are whatever the outcome of the suit, I have two comments. Number one, I think this is problematic in that what we're trying to do is link personhood with human-like characteristics. As I mentioned before, I certainly don't want to see any chimpanzees exploited, but the bottom line is that chimpanzees represent a very, very small fraction of the animals that we, a minute fraction. And what we're doing, in a sense, with this sort of approach is reinforcing the idea that all the billions of animals we exploit, they're not like us in the way chimpanzees are. They're not genetically like us. They're not cognitively like us. They're not like us in the way that chimpanzees are, so therefore they don't matter morally. And that sort of reinforces the whole idea that's been going on for 200 years now. The idea that started with Bentham, that continues with Peter Singer, this idea that animals are different from us in that they have different sorts of minds and they don't have an interest in continuing to live. So therefore, using them for human purposes, as long as we minimize their suffering, which we can't do anyway because of the realities of the economic realities of animal exploitation, then it's okay. I think that's problematic. But the other thing I wanted to mention is that I was reading the press release from the Non-Human Rights Project, and they talk about the fact that some of these chimpanzees they brought the suit and they were aware that some of the chimpanzees that they were thinking of using as named plaintiffs were being abused in a roadside zoo, and they just let that continue because they didn't have their suit ready yet. This has been in the works ever since. I remember this being discussed in the 1990s, so it's been going on for a long time. Preparation's been going on for a long time. But they became aware of these chimpanzees that were in horrible situations, and they did nothing about them because they wanted to get their suit ready. And I think this raises a serious moral issue. When you know that animals are in situations where you actually could get those animals out of the situation by using the anti-cruelty laws, which are by and large useless, but they can be used sometimes. And so instead of using the anti-cruelty laws, people let these animals languish so that they could get their lawsuit ready. I think that, for me, Bob, that raises some serious moral issues, and it sort of is related to this whole idea that these groups go into these factory farms, for example, and they get people to work in these places. They collect information over a period of X months. Sometimes they even have people participating in some of the conduct. the exploitative conduct so that they can get good footage. And then they develop it into a fundraising campaign. And you know, this is all over a period of months where they don't report this to the authorities, where, as I say, anti-cruelty laws are pretty useless, but you can use them sometimes. And so instead of turning this information over when they become aware of it, they develop a campaign. For me, this raises some serious issues. You know, if you're aware of something going on that you can stop, you stop it. And so this idea that, well, you know, we need to get our campaign put together so that we can get a video out there, we can get a campaign out there, which is for fundraising purposes, I think that's problematic. And I think it's problematic when you know that there are chimpanzees in a roadside zoo that you think are in a situation where you could make a really good argument that the anti-cruelty law is being violated, and you do nothing because you need to get your lawsuit put together, then my view is maybe you're losing sight of the forest for the trees.
Hmm. Well, that all interests me now because I do see some laws popping up that seem to require undercover investigators to report cruelty findings, within 48 hours or something?
I think these ag-gag laws are problematic because I don't like to see laws which focus on particular sorts of speech which have content-based focuses or foci, however you want to say.
Gary, do you have a few more minutes left at the top of the hour?
Sure.
Okay, and then I'll have to ask Mark Sutton to be patient. We'll get to him and his first, you know, the first vegan pizza book, Heart Healthy Pizza. We'll talk to Mark Sutton, who has a lot to talk to us about on Go Vegan Radio as well. Once again, welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We have expanded to 2 hours and we're heard live from 5 to 7 p.m. Sundays Pacific Time, nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. We're also trying to raise some money so that we can get back on WWRL in New York City and WCPT in Chicago, stations that ran this program when we were on Air America, when there was an Air America. But the way it is these days, you have to pay for airtime. Well, it's been that way for the 12 years that we've been broadcasting. So you can make a tax-deductible donation at goveganradio.com. And coming up in a few minutes, we'll be talking to the author of the first vegan pizza book ever, Heart Healthy Pizza. We have Mark Sutton coming up. And we're just continuing our discussion a little bit with Professor Gary Francione. And Gary, in the Raw story, so there's this headline. It says, animal rights activists charged with abuse after exposing cattle companies' cruelty. And, you know, that's just what we were talking about right now. It said that the Associated Press reported on Monday that the sheriff's office in Weld County charged Taylor Radig, along with employees of the Quanah Cattle Company, for not sharing her information until 2 months after ending her stint there as a temporary employee, according to KMGH-TV. Radig identified herself as a contractor for Compassion Over Killing. And in this article, it says an animal rights group, whatever that means. So that's exactly what you're saying there. And it's something for us to consider, like the timely nature of reporting and trying to get the abuse ended.
Yeah, I don't like these ag-gag laws because, as I was mentioning before the break, I think that, you know, they're focused on content, and as somebody who cares about the First Amendment, I'm suspicious of and don't like anything which focuses on content as opposed to sort of generally applicable laws. But one of the things that I think is sort of interesting is these animal groups don't like the fact that they're being expected did. Now, I don't think that the case you just mentioned, I'm not sure that was in connection with an ag gag law. I'm not sure that they have one in that state. But a number of the ag gag laws require that you turn over the any information you have of abuse very, very quickly, as is the case. And, you know, you can be charged with violating the anti-cruelty law, just violating the anti-cruelty law without any ag gag law, if you have information that you don't turn over and you're involved in the enterprise, then perhaps you can be charged. But my concern is this: if you've got the information, why not give it to authorities? And the answer, that's a rhetorical question. The answer is because you want to develop a fundraising campaign. And my view is that's not a good enough reason. You know, the idea that you don't turn something over and that you don't do, and this idea that, well, you know, you need the time to make sure that the chart, you know, that the claims will stick. And the bottom line is, if you've got good information, in the internet world where you don't have to depend on newspapers to put out the information, you can put it out yourself. That's just nonsense. If you've got a good information, you've got good information. And what troubles me is that these organizations don't want to turn things over because they want to develop fundraising campaigns, just like the Non-Human Rights Project had information. Apparently, I mean, what they acknowledged, they had information about the conditions under which these chimpanzees were being kept, and they did nothing about it because they wanted to develop their lawsuit and bring their habeas corpus lawsuit. And the result is some of these animals still remain in horrible circumstances, but some of them died, Bob. Some of these non-human great apes that animal people want to get personhood status for, they died because animal advocates kept quiet about what was going on because they wanted to develop their suit. I think this is really troubling to me. It's really troubling to me because it suggests that the ends justify the means and that it's okay for us to compromise morally if we think that there's a good end involved. And I have a problem with that, just as I have a problem with the vivisector who says, let me kill some rats and I'll find a cure for cancer. First of all, I believe it's nonsense and it's voodoo science. But even if it were true, even if it were a plausible claim, I'd have a problem with it because I don't think we have the moral right to take beings who are sentient, who value their lives, and treat them in an instrumental way so that we can get some benefits. I don't believe in those sorts of ill-gotten gains. And so I really think, and I'm hoping that in future weeks we'll have a chance. I am still hopeful that some of the folks that you invited on from these organizations will come on and talk about the happy exploitation they promote and the other sorts of things, the other sorts of campaigns that they promote that sort of rest on animal exploitation. And I would really be curious to talk to people who think it's a good idea for animal advocates to sit on top of information about animal cruelty. Look, anti-cruelty laws are worthless. I mean, I'm one of the first people that, I wrote about that in 1995 in Animals, Property, and Law about the limited use of anti-cruelty laws. Nevertheless, they can be used sometimes, and in some of these cases, I think they could be used. It's not going to change anything, you know, but you could help individual animals, so, like, let's do that.
Mm-hmm. I know what you mean. Oh, Nick Cooney, by the way, has since moved from Farm Sanctuary to Mercy for Animals, I understand. So,
well, you know, they're all kind of
interchangeable, right? Oh, and just one other strange thing that I saw recently. It was reported in the Wall Street Journal that this egg producer in California, J.S. West, refurbished its facilities to have, you know, the furnished cages, the enriched cages.
Enriched cages, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So now HSUS is saying this is unacceptable. These enriched cages are unacceptable. They need to be cage-free. Well, HSUS was just campaigning for a national, you know, that was to be the national standard, these enriched cages. Now they're not acceptable in California when somebody has moved to them.
Well, you know, also, let's be clear. Proposition 2 was sold to the was promoted on the grounds that it would require cage free. That's as we see. There's quite a bit of doubt about how to interpret Proposition 2. It certainly didn't require cage free. Not explicitly. It didn't explicitly require it. And so HSUS.
And I'm the. I'm the only one in California who didn't know that it was a campaign for cage-free. At that time, I was still talking to HSUS, and Paul Shapiro wanted me to support Prop 2, and all he said to me was, basically it means hens will go from having 8.5 inches by 11 inches to 12 inches by 12 inches. That's all I heard. I never heard cage-free until years after it. I mean, it's just so confusing, and birds are supposed to be able to spread their wings, but it only means one bird per cage at a time, you know. Also,
exactly, and you're absolutely right to say that. You know, there's so many different balls in the air. You've got HSUS claiming that Proposition 2 requires cage-free, which it doesn't. Then they're condemning the enriched cage as not being sufficiently protective of welfare interests. Then they switch and they promote this national bill, which requires only cage-free, and basically would establish cage-free as the national standard for the foreseeable future. Now they're going back to Proposition 2 cage-free rhetoric. I mean, the position du jour is the position, you know, that sells.
Right. It's arguing with itself. I mean, it's own best...
Exactly. And the bottom line is, let's stop thinking about how to do the wrong thing the right way. If animals matter, then there is only one rational response, and that's to go vegan. If animals matter at all, there is no other possible rational reply except to say we shouldn't eat them, wear them, use them. Period. End of story. If animals matter, you can't eat them, wear them, or use them. And if you think you love animals and care about animals, but you're still consuming animals, you got to rethink what love means. You got to rethink what caring means, and and stop all this confusion. Let's stop wasting all these brain cells and trying to figure out how to do happy exploitation, how to do compassionate exploitation. Bottom line is, you can't. It's morally wrong, and it's practically not feasible anyway because of the chattel property status of animals. Animal welfare standards will always be very, very low because of the economic realities of animals as property. And I can tell you something right now, and I'm looking forward to your next guest. As a matter of fact, when I get off the phone, I'm going to switch over to my computer because I actually just bought Sutton's book on vegan stuff. And it looks I haven't gotten it yet. I ordered it yesterday. But it looks absolutely fascinating. So I'm very, very curious to hear what Mr. Sutton has to say.
Okay, well then, you go back to your office there and turn on the computer and we'll talk pizza and have you back next week. Remember your homework assignment, Professor Francione.
Yes, I will. It will be difficult, but I will. Amongst the many gems that come forth from you, I shall find the gem that you are referring to.
Well, it's just so shocking. You said to me, "Oh, Bob, you just hit upon something that's brilliant," and I go, sorry, Gary, there's the music. We're out of time. We'll pick this up next week.
You know what I mean? That will be the topic of our discussion next week. I'll find it and we'll do it.
Okay. All right. Serve my egomaniacal, radio talk show host, personality, please.
All right, Bob. Fair enough.
Thanks, Gary. That's Gary Francione. And you can go to his website, abolitionistapproach.com. Gary will soon be receiving his book, Heart Healthy Pizza, which is by Mark Sutton. It has the distinguished honor of having the foreword by none other than Howard Lyman, author of Mad Cowboy, No More a Bull, also glowing recommendations from Caldwell Esselstyn and Neil Barnard. So, with Heart Healthy Pizza, welcome, Mark Sutton. How are you?
I'm just glowing right now. Gary just made my day, I'm telling you. As far as I'm concerned, that's all that needs to be said tonight.
Well, I thought you would be out at the mailbox sending him his copy right now.
Well, he didn't order it from me. He must have ordered it from Amazon. If he'd ordered it from me, I met Gary once at an animal rights conference. I don't think he remembers me directly. But I would have loved to have sent him an autographed copy, which I send from my website. And, hell, I would have sent him one for free. He's great.
Okay. Well, Mark, we'll have some time to spend together coming up after the break. We'll spend most of the time up until the 7 o'clock with Mark Sutton. We're talking pizza. Finally got your attention, right? Pizza! It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Donate, support the show at goveganradio.com. Click Donate. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. Twitter at GoVeganRadio. We are now talking to Mark Sutton. He's the author of the first vegan pizza cookbook. It's Heart Healthy Pizza, over 100 plant-based recipes for the most nutritious pizza in the world. Now, that's quite a claim, but then when you have people like Neil Barnard and Caldwell Esselstyn on the cover, well, that's another subject for his... tell us how this book came to be, Heart Healthy Pizza.
Oh, man. I had the idea when I moved up to this property. I'm caretaking a very large spread in Pennsylvania and helped build a 1,500-square-foot vegetable garden from fallow. And I wanted to do something with my leftover time, even though I was still consulting and doing projects for Howard and other clients. And I thought, what's the biggest
for
thing
Howard,
I could
do? For Howard, you mean Howard Lyman?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought, what's the biggest thing I could do that would help vegetarians and the vegetarian whine that I always hear about, I want my pizza, I won't give up cheese. And I went, why not do a book on pizza? Because I've been messing around with some ideas in terms of how certain sauces, like made of millet, blended with other ingredients, will thicken when I cook them. And I went, what if I do something totally different? Instead of cheese melting on top of a pizza, my sauces thicken up. There's 60 of them on top of the pizza when you bake it, and they're all made with some of the healthiest ingredients you could possibly get. I don't use fake processed cheeses. They're too fatty, they're nutritionally useless, and they're essentially very expensive. But I'm making these sauces using millet, quinoa, rice, vegetables, small amounts of nuts, sweet potatoes, corn, I mean, and so I spent 5.5 years researching this, and half of the way through the process, I had a chance to read Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn's book, Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease, and I interviewed him, and he successfully reversed heart disease through a no-added fat, no oil, plant-based diet. And I went, well, how can I do this? And I tried for 14, 15 weeks. I got off the oil. I lost my addiction. And I've been oil-free now for almost 7 years come February. But then I had to go back and rework all of my recipes because I couldn't release recipes with oil in them. That would have been a violation of my personal integrity. So I wanted to make a book that was a manual. You can create thousands of pizzas with what I've done here, the way I've got it organized. And that's kind of how it happened. And then I made the decision, the fateful decision, to self-publish it. So not only did I write the recipes and get people from a couple different groups, like the Fat Free Vegan Group, to test them for me, but I did all the layouts. I spent a month just working on the two indices, the recipes index and the ingredients index. And I self-published the book. I did the cover, front and back. So it's truly me. This is my personal... Let's just say, hopefully, a gift to vegans and anybody who wants to eat a healthy pizza. I mean, I get emails all the time from heart patients who've had major surgeries going nuts because they can eat my recipes. They can make them, and they can. The doctors say, "Yeah, that's fine." And so, it's the healthiest pizza that you can make.
Well, that's good because doctors usually say, yeah, that's fine to a cheese and pepperoni pizza, not really knowing much about nutrition.
Oh, listen.
But the doctors who do know, and it should be said that Dr. Esselstyn has, you know, been very successful at reversing heart disease.
It's incredible.
One of his main stances is not to have oil, especially for people in the conditions where he needs to treat them. And you yourself then have adopted, going without oil or yourself.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, the pizza, if you had to pick a worse thing to eat, you couldn't do better than pizza. That's kind of an oxymoronic way to put it. But it's full of refined flours in general, white. It's full of saturated fatty cheese from tortured dairy animals. It usually has dead flesh on it and a ton of sodium. And if you're lucky, if someone puts a vegetable on it. And then they deliver it to your doorstep in 30 minutes. I actually have a short video I did on cable on my website where I showed how to make a heart-healthy pizza for the busy professional in 30 minutes.
What's the website?
www.hearthealthypizza.com.
Stay with me, Mark, through the break. We'll continue our discussion of the first vegan pizza cookbook, Heart Healthy Pizza. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Hey, you can advertise your vegan and cruelty-free products. Bob at goveganradio.com is my email. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. On Twitter at GoVeganRadio. And want you to know that there is a really outstanding restaurant that you can enjoy in the Bay Area. It's been around a long time. Even people who aren't vegans love it. And people who are vegans love it even more. It's Vegetarian House. It's 100% vegan, organic restaurant. 520 East Santa Clara Street in San Jose. And, you know, it's always crowded and, you know, people are loving it. And, you know, it's just really a great time, a really popular restaurant. But what's also booming now for Vegetarian House is the catering business, with companies around Silicon Valley having parties and corporate meetings, and maybe you have a wedding coming up, and you want really great vegan food catered. Get in touch with Vegetarian House. Check out the menu at vegetarianhouse.us. And you'll see that, well, going vegan is just, well, we sacrifice nothing, and we sacrifice no one. And, you know, we have the best food. I wanted to mention a notice was going around that perhaps banning the bull hook would be under discussion this coming Tuesday at the Oakland City Council meeting. I don't think that the bull hook ban will be discussed there. There may be some discussion of permitting the circus, which would be somewhat different. I think that if there are violations, permit violations, circuses can be banned from returning to municipalities for 2 years or longer. But anyway, the bull hook will not be under discussion. You might be able to get a minute to speak on behalf of the permitting, but that's this Tuesday, December 10th at 5:30 p.m. At the Oakland City Council. We're talking to Mark Sutton. His book is Heart Healthy Pizza, over 100 plant-based recipes for the most nutritious pizza in the world. And Mark, you worked at pizza parlors as a kid, did you?
Oh,
back
I did.
In your youth? Yeah.
I did. And many, many times. I worked at three parlors, if I remember correctly. I graduated early from high school and ended up working for a year before going to college, and then another one during college. And what got me thinking about making pizza by hand again was I went to a dinner party of two couples with a NASA scientist at the time, and he pulled out, made dough, shaped it, and made a pizza in front of us. And I'd forgotten how easy it is and how wonderful it is. And certainly, you know, everybody loves, well, most people, just about 99% of the population loves pizza.
Everybody loves pizza. Everybody
yeah.
loves pizza.
You know, and so, you know, it became clear that if I could, you know, this was like a holy grail. Could I pull this off? Especially, mm-hmm. and then I'm making them heart healthy was a whole nother level of difficulty.
Right, and you talk about what might seem like some exotic ingredients to people, like the quinoas of the world and all, but what if somebody wanted a, you know, like kind of a basic tomato, you know, like the regular tomato kind of pizza? I mean, what's the range? What's the range of kinds of pizzas that you
have? That's an excellent question. There's two aspects to it. One is, I live in an area in Pennsylvania where cholesterol is one of the four food groups. Okay, there's no Whole Foods, you know, within 2 hours of here.
Sure.
Okay, there's no Trader Joe's. So I had to learn to use inexpensive, reasonably accessible ingredients. Okay, and that's why some of the recipes use rice as part of its base. Some of them use just vegetables. Some use tofu. Okay, they're not all grain-based, but I think millet, barley, and quinoa are three of the least used grains that in this society that should be used.
Mm-hmm.
The other answer to your question is, the first chapter is about making dough. The second chapter is bottom sauces, I call them. So there's red sauces, there's salsas, there's all kinds of things you can put on the bottom of a pizza, since I like my cheese-like stuff on top. And then there's a chapter on making cheese-like sauces, okay? And then there's a chapter of pizza concepts. Here's some ideas. Some of them are fully fleshed out. Sorry for using the word flesh. Some of them are fully laid out, and some are suggestions on how you could make a pizza. And so I have pizzas like a Reuben pizza with a pumpernickel crust. There's the official Mad Cowboy. Howard told me what he wanted on his pizza, and he guided me as I made it.
And what is Howard's favorite pizza, then? What is the Mad Cowboy?
Oh, it's got a bunch of stuff on it. It even has sauerkraut on it. And he said, be sure to rinse the sauerkraut because I don't want a lot of sodium in my diet. What a guy. What a guy. Hey, by the way, Bob, I want to say how much I honored I am to be on your show. And just thank you for your incredible work for the animals all these years. And I hope people do donate to help keep you doing what you do.
Well, thank you, Mark. Flattery will get you everywhere. So please buy Mark's book, Heart Healthy.
You can also get it at Amazon.
Okay. All right. I know you're probably printing like page 119 right now in the back room, ready to send it off to Gary Francione, who ordered it.
I would have gladly sent him one and thanked him for all his work, too. I mean, he's been a... He was one of the early understanders. He was one of the first people to really get out there and lay it on the line. And I love his no-compromise position, and you're very much like him in that way.
Yeah, and he's on the show every week now. So if Gary wanted something to taste really cheesy, so you say cheese sauces in here. Like, what's making things taste cheesy?
The example I use for a lot of people, I've made this for carnivores who've interviewed me. I call it the 30-minute professional. And there's a video on my website, on my YouTube channel as well, which you can find out from the website, where you take oats, navy beans, cornstarch or flax seeds, nutritional yeast or mustard, maybe a little bit of sriracha sauce, chili garlic sauce, and water, and you blend it into a thick pancake-like batter, and you pour that over your pizza. So you've got all that intense fiber from the beans, you got all that intense fiber and nutrition from the oats, which gives it a very thick texture, and that's closer to what carnivores are used to. Some of the sauces are much more delicate. The quinoa sauces are delicate. The barley ones tend to be a little more robust. Millet's somewhere in between. Rice, the rice almond recipe, Brianna Clark Grogan liked a lot. She thought it was a great taste, and she gave me a wonderful review on the book, which is quite an honor because I've been reading her books for almost two decades.
Sure, yeah.
So it's been fun.
It all sounds really, really delicious to me. Actually, I love actually the sounds of all of those ingredients. I guess.
It's just a matter of making a thick pancake-like batter out of the ingredients in a recipe. It's the same process for all of them, and pour it over the top.
Like one and of nutritional the yeast. Nutritional yeast has a bit of a cheesy taste to it.
Yeah,
right?
I can't get it that often. So I learned that you can use different kinds of mustards to also get a similar taste, not the same, but close enough.
Interesting.
So that's how I got around the fact that nutritional yeast is hard for me to get out here.
Yeah. By the way, the carnivores, the people you feed, whom you refer to as carnivores, are actually herbivores gone wrong, actually.
That's fair enough.
And we can get them going right.
Well, I like that. I know. I like thinking outside the pizza box, so to speak. To me, that's what we have to do. And you know, these fake cheeses that people buy and are... I have an appendix devoted just to showing what's in these things in terms of fat. And there's no nutrition in them. So people buying the fake cheeses, yeah, they're making a transition, but ultimately they're not helping their body, you know, in terms of hypertension, obesity, diabetes, and a number of things that can be related to a high-fat diet. You can be a vegan and eat bad food. And there's too many vegans. There's a lot of new ones coming out. Forks Over Knives has helped, and you know, some of the other movies and that have come out, documentaries. And I'm seeing such an incredible increase in the number of people wanting to be vegan and not knowing how to go about it over the past 5 years. I'm sure the internet had a lot to do with it in terms of be able to socialize, find out things, learn about the cruelty, watch the videos, find recipes, ask questions. It has been such a boon.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And of course, probably Go Vegan Radio being broadcasting for the last 12 years had you know, most to do with that. But
when you got syndicated, I went, that's just great. I mean, that's just fantastic.
We were on Air America, you know, for a year also, so that was 26 radio stations, and I'm trying to get back on in New York, WWRL and WCPT in Chicago. Those stations love the show, but for some reason they have to charge for airtime, and a two-hour show in both cities would come out to $1,000 per week. Yeah. So if the rich benefactor is listening out there who wants to get a vegan show back on in New York and Chicago, it can be done. Michael Budke of Stop Animal Exploitation Now has donated $2,000 toward the cause and is asking other people.
You send me his email. I'll send him a book for that donation.
Oh, great, great, great. Yeah, he's another really good cook. Oh, and your sauces, too. I mean, this doesn't just have to be on pizza, right? So we can have these sauces on rice.
On pasta, you can heat them in a pot and put them on pasta and stir fries. They thicken up in stir fries. Quesadillas, steamed potatoes. I had one gal send me an email, all excited. She's a cookbook author, saying she made one of my sauces and then used it as a salad dressing.
Ah.
And there's 60 of them. I mean, yeah, I just went, okay, it's going to keep you busy, gal.
Yeah. Do you remember which one, or are they all good as salad dressings, too?
I wasn't sure. I didn't write this aspect up in the book as much as I wanted to, because I hadn't tested them all. There's some really unusual variations, and not in terms of ingredients, but they're different, okay? And some of the sauces have different characteristics, but I've tested enough to know I don't see why any of them wouldn't work. Okay. Mm-hmm.
I see that there are like so-called sausage recipes and all, and like what are these meaty textures, vegan meaty textures?
My favorite is my tempeh, how to make anchovies with tempeh.
Oh, wow. Oh, I like the sound of that. Mark, we have to take one more break,
sure.
So hang with me, please.
No problem.
We're talking to Mark Sutton, the subject that interests everyone, of course, pizza. His book is Heart Healthy Pizza, the first vegan pizza cookbook. And keep listening and support the show with a donation at goveganradio.com. We continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. It is the holiday season, and for our friends who do drink wine, you should know that most wines are not vegan, most wines are not organic, and to be sure that the wine matches your ethical standards, sometimes the wines are know, they're fined with, you know, they're clarified with egg products and dairy or gelatin. But you can get vegan wines made from certified organic grapes by going to veganwinesonline.com.
Oh, that's
VeganWinesOnline.com. Yes, so, and I'm sure that there's the perfect, you know, vegan wine to go along with. Oh, gosh, it's just, everything's just looking so good in this book here, Heart Healthy Pizza, Mark Sutton, over 100 plant-based recipes for the most nutritious pizza in the world. Yes, even patients of Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn can use this book. In fact, he endorses it. So along with Neil Barnard,
it was a wonderful moment. Speaking of the holidays, I wanted to let people know that I do have the book available at my website at a holiday discount.
Okay, so, and your website is
www.hearthealthypizza.com. I'm still struggling to get an ebook or a PDF out. I don't know when that's going to happen yet, but okay, I figured I'd discount the book for the holidays.
And I must be getting hungry now. I'm just looking at. Oh, okay. Oh, cauliflower, carrots, and black-eyed peas sauce.
Oh, that's an incredible sauce. Yeah, a gal tweeted about that last week, saying it was amazing.
I'm just looking at all of them. Oh, but you mentioned anchovies, so I have to.
Anchovies. Yeah, the trick with the Tampa anchovies was using a sea vegetable-based broth to steep the tempeh in.
Ah.
So you get a slightly fishy mm-hmm. taste to it, and I cut back on the salt, but you can certainly add more salt. But I've had people comment they like that one, the idea that they could have, you know, a tempeh or a tofu. You could do it with tofu as well. I think I mentioned that. In the comments, anchovy. And mm-hmm. I do talk about how to make ground sausage kind of things. I didn't spend a lot of time on the meat analogs because I didn't want to emphasize that. Most of them are high in calories and expensive and high in sodium, but certainly I do have a Frankfurter pizza, you know, that has recommends, you know, chili and sauerkraut if you like, however you like your hot dogs, your vegan hot dogs. Mm-hmm. And it uses tofu pups, okay, which is a very mm-hmm. unusual pizza, but it came out great.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And we have other Franks, too. I really like field roast Franks. I like tofurkey. I like the tofurkey Franks, the hot dogs.
My preference is yeast because it's no fat, okay? Mm-hmm. Some other products have a little too much oil for me, mm-hmm. but that shouldn't dissuade people from giving it a try. Once in a while, yeah, I might do some field roast sausage or something like that.
Yeah, go ahead, splurge, you know.
Yeah, go nuts, Mark.
Really, you know. And we were talking about how, you know, I mean, this book is perfect. Everybody loves pizza. Everybody's going vegan. Even Al Gore just went vegan. And, oh, God, I don't know how much time we have left, but,
I think what you want me to say is, yeah, I worked with Al Gore and the IPCC. I've done work on global climate change when at NASA with two Nobel Peace Prize winners.
Mm-hmm. And the truth finally became convenient for Al Gore after all this time.
I still can't believe it because it bugged me for years. It bugged me. A lot of the scientists at NASA, at Goddard Space Flight Center, thought they were such incredible environmentalists, but they still ate meat and dairy.
Yeah, it's crazy. Al Gore, too. But he was in the cattle business and all. But maybe you should be sending him a copy of Heart Healthy Pizza.
You know, I might do that. I sent one to Clinton. I never got a response back. But maybe I should send one to Big Al. You know,
I mean, he did look big.
He looked awful the last time I saw him on TV. He looked this awful physically. Mm-hmm. Whereas Clinton shows that a vegan diet is extraordinarily healthy. Clinton looks so good for his age. It's incredible.
It saved his life, whatever he's doing. And sometimes I'm not quite sure if he's totally vegan because he says he eats no animal products. And then he says fish and eggs.
Yeah. So it's tough, but it's... Hello? But at least he's known for this, and that's good.
Yeah, we're out of time. Thanks for being with us today, Mark Sutton, the book Heart Healthy Pizza. And please support the program with a donation. Thanks for listening. Archives are at goveganradio.com.